Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
All right, time for question mark. And Troy, this one is for both of us. Why can't we just call Paxton Lynch a bust and move on? That's from Jason in Greeley.
Well, again, it's getting close to that. They're reaching a crossroads, Jason, and thank you for the question on the text line. The reality is this. The clock is ticking. It's like the 60-minute set. You can hear it click, 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 tick, tick, tock. And right. If he doesn't show it now, then yes. All signs are pointing the wrong direction for Lynch at this point. He's running out of time. Why don't we say he's a bust now? Because he still has, in theory, a sliver of hope to save this. Show he's a functional backup. Show he could still be. But even then, I don't know how that makes sense, because if Case is the guy we think he is, I don't know what future Paxton would have here. I mean, in his fifth year then? I mean, I don't know. I don't see him. But the reason we don't, Jason, is because he still has a sliver of hope to show he can gain traction in his NFL career, and that would start Saturday night against Minnesota.
Yeah, I think usually bust is a past tense term, meaning he doesn't play here anymore.
That's true.
Then it's easy. I mean, you still have hope, and you understand, like, coming into this thing, you understood that there's a process here. And this happens with a lot of people. There's a lot of guys who are great guys, who work hard, who are professionals, who get to the NFL level, Troy, and are overwhelmed. They're just overwhelmed by the amount of information that you have to know, the amount of adjustment that you have to make in the middle of, you know, a cadence or a snap count, that you have to make an adjustment on a route. You know, you're running an out route, and you've got to be able to read the coverage. And if it's a cover two, you know, you want to square that thing off a little bit longer. You know what? You want to take a 15-yard route and it's cover two and that corner sinks, and you want to make that 15-yard route a 17-yard route because you want to create a little room for the quarterback to put it over that corner's head in front of the safety. Where if it's a cover three or if it's quarters coverage, it looks exactly like two, but you're in quarters. Now I want to square that thing off tight at 15. You know, and you've got to be able to make that decision while you're running full speed. And you've got to read the same thing the quarterback is reading. And so there's so much that goes into playing the game, where there's a lot of guys that get into this thing that are great athletes, that were great college players, that the knowledge base and your professional football, the knowledge base and the understanding of the game is so much more than it was, that you get overwhelmed. And when you get overwhelmed, you don't play fast. You can't.
When you think, you stink.
Yeah. Well,
right?
It's paralysis by analysis. So I mean, that to me is what ends up happening to you, and it's just a really tough thing. I will say this, though. When the organization seems to want it more for a player than the player wants it, that never goes over well. And I think that's one of the things that you have to get over as an organization. At some point, and you've seen this in your years of covering baseball, and you've seen it in your years of covering football, there comes a point where you just have to let go of a guy, regardless of his potential, regardless of where you drafted him, regardless of how much you like him. There comes a point where you're just like, this guy doesn't fit.
It's not going to happen here.
Right.
And sometimes that's the case. But you made the great point. The player has to want it more than anyone else to succeed at the NFL level.
Right.
You have to want it more than I do. I can tell you you should do it, but you have to want it more than I do.
Right, exactly. All right, here's one for you, Troy. Question mark on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Discussion about the defensive player, the veteran defensive player, this is from Jesse, that you're most excited about this season.
Well, it's an interesting question, because I think Von Miller could win Defensive Player of the Year.
Uh-huh.
So I'm excited about that, because they're going to have a threat opposite of him, whether that's through Ray, Chubb, Barrett, a combination of all three. But the player I would say that I don't want to say excited, but intrigued by is going to be Derek Wolfe. Can Wolfe stay healthy? And if he does, their defensive line has a chance to be one of the best in the league. because of the versatility. They'll have inside rush. They'll have a guy who can stop the pass. They add Clinton McDonald. But what is Derek Wolfe's season going to look like? I'm intrigued by that.
All right. So special guest joining the program right now, Schlereth and Evans. I am Mark Schlereth, sitting in the big seat, sitting in the big boy chair for Mike Evans, who his job stinks compared to the job that I normally do is in your chair over there, Troy. But joining the program right now, he's been gone for a while, and some of you have been questioning what's he doing, questioning work ethic, questioning all the things like why would he take this time off. Mike Evans, my partner, the love of my life, Mike. It's
guys,
my work husband. How are you,
morning,
my friend?
Good morning. Yes, I'm starting to get some questions. Where are you? You know, what are you doing?
That's because, Mike, that's because I suck at your job. So people are like, what is Mike doing?
Well, I think I have a pretty good excuse. This past Friday, I had open heart surgery, as Mark, you're aware of, Troy,
yes.
You're aware of, and it's going really well. I had a terrific surgeon and team over at Porter Hospital. Dr. Miles Goober and his staff were just outstanding. I can't thank Porter Hospital enough for the job they did. And I'm already home. I'm home recovering. I got a pretty sore chest. Got a pretty cool scar out of it that you saw the other day, Mark. And,
yes.
But, yeah, I'm going to be out for a couple of weeks recovering. But doing well, and really wanted to, you know, use this time just to, you know, let a lot of the guys know out there that, you know, I was really lucky that I got this diagnosed the way I did. I had just gone in for a routine physical, and in the process, my doctor, Joseph Herman at Lakewood Family Medicine, can't thank him enough. He discovered a heart murmur, and that led to finding out that I had, a valve that needed to be replaced in my aorta. And as a result, I had that surgery on Friday and doing much better. But I'm going to be out a couple of weeks. So you'll have to press on as the host of the show.
Well, here's the thing, Mike. I went and saw you at Porter on Sunday, and you looked tremendous considering what you'd been through. And my challenge to you is I think you can do this. I think you can come back on Friday. I think you could set – this could be a world record. You know, I mean, I really think that you're kind of milking this thing a little bit. I think you're ready to roll. You know, I'll take it easy on you. I'll try not to make you laugh. And, I think you can tighten this thing back up and be here on Friday.
Well, it's funny because they give – anybody who has, you know, open-heart surgery, you know, you get your – sternum, you know, tract like they do. They give you a pillow to walk around with, basically to just kind of clutch to your chest, you know, just to kind of keep the pressure from, you know, building for a sneeze or a laugh or anything like that. So I would have to ask you not to be funny, which, as you know,
that's easy for him.
Right. Hey, it's when I'm hosting, it's really easy not to be funny because there's too much stuff flying around, Mike. I have no idea what I'm doing.
You better not have that that pillow, Mike, in the form of a snowflake, or you'll never hear the end of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear you're doing well, Mike. Man, you've been in my prayers. I don't think it was hard because people would ask what was up, and you know, we'd just say, hey, you know, he's out for, you know, I'd just tell people he's out, he'll be back. But to go through what you were going through and to share it publicly, I know I appreciate it. And a reminder to guys to, hey, make sure you have stuff checked out because, you know, thank God you had this detected early.
That's the thing, Troy, because, you know, I never showed ever. I never showed any symptoms of any kind of heart disease. You know, I was able to be active and doing things. And if it had not been for this routine physical and the doctor hearing this heart murmur, I'd be going along my way not even knowing anything was wrong, and I would have reached a point where it would have been really serious, and a lot of damage would have been done. So, you know, just, you know, from my little soapbox here, just urging everybody out there, you know, just go get a physical, go get your heart listened to, go get your heart checked, and, you know, just make sure you're okay, because a lot of that stuff that ends up happening down the road can be prevented if you jump on things right now.
Yeah, and as guys, you know, we always like to be like, I'm fine, and that's nothing to worry about, and this, that, and the other. You're right, 100%. Go get yourself checked out. Go make sure you get your physical. Go make sure you take care of your health, because it's the most important thing that we have, as you well know. Mike, man, I'm so happy, man. I love you, brother, and I miss you, and I'm looking forward to your return on Friday.
Well, let me just say, the record. Mark.
Oh, wait, it's not Friday.
Say.
Yeah.
couple quick things. First of all, Troy, you got to have Mark's wife, Lisa, make some of the chocolate chip cookies that she brought over to the hospital on Sunday. They were a huge hit. Everybody loved them. So they're unbelievable chocolate chip cookies. So, again, thank Lisa for that, Mark. And also, you know, please, I'm going to be, you know, laying around recovering but getting a little bored. So, please, hit me up on Twitter. You know, we can, you know, talk Broncos, whatever. So, you know, reach out at MikeEvans1043 and, you know, we'll just keep hashing it out until I get back here in a little while.
All right, Mike. Well, listen, get some rest and get yourself well. And, again, you know, set that record. We'll see you on Friday afternoon or Friday morning, right? Bright and early.
You got it, Mark.
Great to hear from you, Mike.
Yeah.
Just keeping the seat warm. You'll be back soon, my man.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you soon.
All right, buddy. That's Mike Evans right there, my partner, who had open-heart surgery on Friday and back at his house Monday afternoon.
God bless him.
Yeah, how about that? I went and saw him on Sunday. We went and hung out, and like he said, my wife made a bunch of chocolate chip cookies, so I took a couple of big, you know, big Tupperware things of chocolate chip cookies. So it was just Mike and I sitting in his room, and then another buddy came in later, but we got these two big tubs. So the hospital staff, like, they're vultures. Like, if you go to ICU, like, the hospital staff, they're a bunch of vultures. You know, they're just kind of hovering around. You can see them eyeball. And I said, hey, take one of these, you know, take one of these out there and out there to the group. And within, I think there was, like, four people total on the floor manning ICU. They ate, like, 30 cookies. Like, they went through it, and they brought me back the empty, you know, the empty Tupperware thing. Like, hey, thanks, this was great. And so it's just really funny to kind of watch those vultures eat those cookies, but they were all like, these are the best cookies I've ever had in my entire life. Kudos to my wife, who made them, and great to see Mike, in the hospital. Great to hear his voice. He's doing well. And it's just amazing that they can open up your heart, essentially take it out, do the bypass there, fix what's wrong, put a new valve in, stick it back in your chest and sew you up and you're good to go. I mean, it just is. It's amazing the medical advances and having a, you know, a granddaughter that went through open heart surgery 8 days after she was born and doing stuff with the American Heart Association. Make sure you get yourself checked out. Don't ignore symptoms. Don't ignore issues. Don't ignore not feeling well. Go get yourself checked out because, again, your health is, that's the most important thing you have. So make sure you do that. And I'm glad to hear that Mike's doing better.
Yeah, it's fantastic to hear his voice. I know that because I was on with him for a couple days leading up to the surgery, and he was ready for it. But there was clearly some anxiousness, as you would expect. And again, the thing you have to realize is it was detected recently. It wasn't a genetic condition that they were like, okay, he's known about for 10 years, and at some point you're going to have this fixed. It all came about in the span of a few weeks. And, you know, again, I appreciate Mike sharing his story. And those of you who can listen later on the, if you missed on the, it'll be replayed, right, Scotty, on the podcast or the, on the on demand, you can hear it. But again, please, again, have, if you think there's an issue or have your routine physical, be checked out and make sure that you're getting everything taken care of. Because Mike had his open heart surgery. He's doing better and he will be back soon. And all I'm doing here is keeping the seat warm and trying to keep stink out of trouble.
Right. And so, you know, when I'm stumbling around trying to figure out what the hell I'm doing, just understand this is not the seat that I want to be in. This is Mike's seat. And as I tell Mike all the time, his job is to run the show. My job usually to run around in the show. And running the show for me is not easy. So lay off me, you people, right? Lay off. Anyhow, glad to hear Mike's voice. Yeah, glad to hear Mike's voice. Glad that he's doing well and really excited for him to make his return. Although, you know, I love doing the show with you, Troy. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't like you. I just don't necessarily like sitting in this chair that I'm sitting in.
I understand. It's like when I anchor. I'm much more comfortable when they throw the show out to me and ask me about the Broncos, then
right.
I'm anchoring, it's a different animal. I don't take it personally, Mark.
Yeah.
I know how little you think of me. So it's nothing's going to change that.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about as we're sitting out here at UC Health Training Center. You can check out our Training Camp 2018 webcam, 1043thefan.com/live, presented by CSU Global if you want to get that done. Don't forget also, Lunch with a Legend featuring DeMarcus Ware, presented by Hendrix Gin, Friday, August 17th at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in the DTC. Intimate upscale business lunch with D. Ware. Stokely and Zach will be broadcasting live. You want to reserve your seat, all you have to do is make a phone call, 720-908-0298. That's 720-908-0298. Lunch with a Legend featuring DeMarcus Ware, August 17th. You want to be a part of that. You can get that done, too. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, always a great meal over there. So we've talked a ton about the Broncos, a ton about this upcoming game versus the Minnesota Vikings, some of the intriguing matchups there. But I want to get back to the Rockies. You cover the Rockies for two decades. Rockies really, like, Rockies staying relevant. Like, this time of year, normally, you know, it's like, okay, we're moving on to the Broncos, and it's Broncos full-time. But the Rockies staying relevant, two games out of first place in the NL West, two games out in the wild card as well. And, I mean, Kyle Freeland is a guy, you know, like, I always get irritated, Troy, with kind of the national, and I spent a long time at ESPN, and there's this national perspective that everybody kind of poo-poos whatever you do as a hitter in this ballpark. You know, they all, Nolan Arenado, oh, yeah, he's great, and he's got the homers, and he's got the power numbers, you know, and he's got the doubles, and, you know, he's got a great average. Yeah, but he plays at Coors Field, you know, and there's been the humidor here for years, but it's always, yeah, he plays at Coors Field, and it's an expansive outfield, and, you know, you're going to hit a lot of home runs. You're going to run into a lot of home runs and that type of thing. But it never seems to be that same story never seems to transfer over to the pitching.
It's ridiculous.
What Kyle Freeland has done, what does he have
Here's I'm going to read these stats
okay.
to you, and you're going to be just your jaw's going to drop if you're not really following his season closely. Kyle Freeland is 10-7 this year, 3.04 ERA, great year by any measure. Dive deeper, he's 7-2 at Coors Field this year with a 2.18 ERA in 62 innings. He is allowing an opponent batting average of 210. Are you kidding me?
Right.
He's allowed fewer hits than innings pitched, which at Coors Field is not easy because of the vastness of the field. The outfielders have to send text messages. They don't even call for a ball. It's so big out there between left and left center and center fielder. So, again, just digest that for a second. Kyle Freeland, 7-2 at home, 2.18 ERA, 210 batting average against.
Right.
I mean, that is doing work.
So, to me, if you're going to put that on the hitters and saying, well, you know, it elevates your, you know, I mean, and it was bad last year. Like, Chuck Nasty's splits were bad.
I knew it was going to cost him MVP.
Right. It hurt. His home splits, he hit like 390 at home, you know, and 276 on the road or whatever it was. I don't remember the exact splits, but it was pretty dramatic. And, you know, it just feeds into the national narrative that, oh, playing at Coors Field is such an advantage and nobody should get the MVP if you play at Coors Field and you're a hitter and you're an everyday player. Well, the reverse of that should be true. Kyle Freeland should be a guy that's being mentioned right now in the Cy Young. Like, I know that, I know the usual suspects. You're right. I mean, my son pitched with Scherzer, and I know how good he is.
Aaron Nola.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know all these guys that are having phenomenal seasons, but you look at a 2.18 ERA at home in Coors Field, 7-2 record. I mean, that's a 0.96 or a 1.12, like at any other ballpark in the National League, in my mind. Like, those numbers are absolutely ridiculous when you talk about the expansive outfield and the fact that home runs are hit, you know, on a pretty regular basis.
Well, again, since its inception in 1995, Coors Field is the most offensive-friendly ballpark in the history of Major League Baseball. It is normalized to a degree with the humidor, which came in 2002. You know, the prior to that, the average score at Coors Field was like 7-6 with 3.3 home runs per game.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the humidor, it was a joke.
Okay,
now I don't know the exact numbers now because I'm not on the beat anymore. But it went down after a few years to the average score being closer to 5-4. 4-4 type opponent with 1.5 homers a game.
Okay.
So it's normalized. And it and even last year, I was freaking out during the playoffs arguing with people. There were way fewer home runs hit there than at Yankee Stadium or in Philadelphia or at Texas Rangers ballpark.
Right.
It's not the most offensive friendly in terms of home runs. Mm-hmm. It's just too big, so you give up cheap hits. And
right.
with the altitude, some of those cheap hits are cheap home runs. But by any measure, it's a difficult place to pitch. So what Freeland is doing is rather remarkable. A 2.18 ERA mm-hmm. at home for a team that's in it.
Right.
And every one of his start matters, and he's become the ace of the staff. I mean, all of that context suggests he's been certainly in the discussion of a top 10 starter in the league this year.
Right. You know, it's really funny. I had this the year before, Mark Melancon, who's a golden guy, and
yep.
just a great young man. He's one of my favorites. He and my son played together in summer baseball, and then they played at Arizona. They were roommates at the University of Arizona together, and they've been pretty connected for all these years. And Melancon was pitching with the Pirates at the time, and I went downtown before a game, and we had coffee. You know, we just kind of hung out and just talked baseball and just talked life in general and had some coffee and just kind of hung out. And Mark was telling me, he's like, it's really interesting when you're traveling through these different ballparks. And he goes, like, when it Coors Field, like, you would think that you want to be a ground ball pitcher at Coors Field. But he said, like, our perspective at Coors is we want to throw fly balls. He goes, now occasionally they're going to run into one. You're going to get a homer hit on you. But he goes, The one thing you don't want is a ground ball in a gap at Coors, because that's running to the wall and that's a triple. It's so big. So I'd rather be a fly ball pitcher at Coors. He goes, you get to Petco? That thing's like a putting green. In Petco, nobody can hit it out of a Petco Park, right? So, different fields, the way they're constructed, how you want to change the way you pitch, and it's amazing because Coors Field, those guys talk about putting it on the ground in the outfield, man, it's trouble for you. That's extra base hits for you. And so it's a concern, for coming in here and the way you pitch and to see what Freeland has done here at Coors. What did he give up last night? Two hits?
Two hits over seven innings. 103 pitches.
Yeah, four or five strikeouts. I mean, he was phenomenal last night. And on top of that, I cannot tell you how impressed I've been with John Gray since coming back from his demotion to Albuquerque and what he's been able to accomplish and the way he's kind of turned around his season when everybody was talking about, and you and I have talked about it, is it to the bullpen for him? Is that the place where he belongs more than any other place? Man, he has really come around and taken that demotion, taken it to heart, and really improved his game.
Well, again, he earned the demotion because of the fact he couldn't get through five innings. I think he had eight starts of fewer than five innings. But what's changed Mark with Gray is with runners on base, he's put his foot down. And he's a strike thrower now. He's not nibbling. He's pitching more like Freeland, attacking the zone, getting when he gets ahead and counts, finishing batters off more quickly, and learning that he doesn't need to strike out 12 guys. Some of his best outings have been 5-6 strikeouts. Balls in play, weak ground balls, weak contact. So we'll see. But they got Bettis going tonight. He's in for Senzatella. Senzatella's got shoulder inflammation. They think he's going to be okay. We'll see. Chad Bettis tonight, a huge start for him, one of his biggest since he's returned from cancer. He's wanted this moment for so long to pitch in this kind of moment, and we'll see. But I would expect a good outing from Bettis tonight.
Yeah, that'll be certainly exciting. I'm going to go down to Coors Field tonight and watch that game live, so I'm really excited about that. But when we return, one of the best and most constant parts of this defense is under a lot of change. And are they ready to respond? We'll talk about that next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Live from UC Health Training Center, Schlereth & Evans, Mark Schlereth, Troy Rank, as we just had Mike Evans on, wishing him all the best as he's recovering from open heart surgery, doing great. He'll be back within, a week or so, a week and a half, something like that. So, Mike Evans, wishing him all the best. You can get him at MikeEvans1043 on Twitter if you want to, chop it up with Mike Evans. But Troy Rank alongside Mark Schlereth, UC Health Training Center, depth chart. Going to be released about 9 o'clock, but we're starting to get some things trickling out. Mike Kliss just tweeted out that Bradley Chubb listed ahead of Shane Ray on the first depth chart. Any surprise there, Troy?
I mean, it's not a shock because of how they're going to use Chubb. They see him as a guy who can, you know, line up in a four-point stance and stop the run. So how they employ he, Shane Ray, and Barrett will be curious. I mean, does it matter who starts? I mean, it may later in the season. Early on, they're going to rotate through. And it suggests that, you know, they see Ray as a guy who can come in and just provide pass rush. You know, Chubb is the bigger guy, kind of weaken him up, soften the underbelly. And then you bring in Ray for a knockout punch on a sack. Then maybe you flip the role a little bit. But I talked to DeMarcus Ware about Chubb a couple days ago, and he said – I asked him, I said, he's a pretty big guy, huh? You know, just kind of, he's like, he can stop the run. He's like, Troy, he can stop the run.
Right.
And it's going to give us versatility with the way we use those guys. So not a shock. I expect, again, we've said Devontae Booker to be listed at one, if nothing else, for his experience. That's a fluid situation. And I want to see how they list the cornerbacks. Will Yadam be listed in front of Langley at nickel? I think Tremaine Brock will be listed is the starting nickel, but he hasn't practiced in going on, you know, nearly a week. So does that mean Yadam technically is ahead of Brendan Langley? I think that we will see that on the depth chart. So again, that doesn't shock me. To answer your question, long-winded, it doesn't shock me because those three outside linebackers between Chubb, Barrett, and Ray are going to move around. It is going to be a bit of a fluid situation.
Here's one of the things that really intrigues me, and I'll go back to my playing days. The New York Giants back in the day when they had Leonard Marshall and LT and Carl Banks and Van Pelt and Dorsey. They had an outstanding group. They really played, and Bill Belichick was the defense coordinator that time. They really played a 3-4 that was a four down type of line. And that's kind of the way they played it. Then Bill Belichick ends up becoming the head coach of the New England Patriots. They played a 3-4, 4-3 hybrid. And when you have guys that have versatility, it makes it really hard for an offense to distinguish what a personnel grouping, what a team is actually playing. So when you have a guy like Chubb, who can play outside, he can play inside, he can play D-end, he can play outside linebacker, and then you mix it in with a Shane Ray, and you mix it in with a Shaq Barrett, and a Von Miller, and a Derek Wolfe, it becomes one of those situations where it becomes very hard to designate what defense is being played. So the reason that's important is because a lot of your pass protection rules change from a 3-4, from a three-down lineman to a four-down lineman set. And so it really was hard back in my day. The New England Patriots used to drive you crazy because they would have guys that could play outside line. Mike Vrabel could be D-end or an outside linebacker. Teddy Bruschi could play inside linebacker, outside linebacker, D-end in a pass rush situation. Richard Seymour was a D-tackle, D-end. You know, like he played versatile positions. Willie McGinnis was a D-end outside linebacker. So when you'd break the huddle, you'd look at the personnel grouping and you'd be like, we really can't designate what they're in. Therefore, we can't say what the protection, how we're going to do this until they line up. And it becomes a real problem. So Bradley Chubb gives you some versatility that you just don't get with a Shane Ray, because a Shane Ray is not going to line up in a base defense and play a 5 technique, 2 gap defensive end, where Bradley Chubb can do that. You know, Shane Ray is not going to line up and actually play a 3 technique defensive tackle.
No, but he could line up inside if they do their 4 on the floor NASCAR package.
Absolutely.
And line up inside.
Absolutely.
And do a blitz,
but that
way.
Becomes
a twist blitz.
Right, but that becomes very easy to designate. What I'm saying is, like, if they come out with Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray, Chubb, and Von Miller, it's easy to say, hey, four down NASCAR, you know, we're good. Like, we'll just treat those guys as four downs. So that's part of the versatility that Bradley Chubb brings to defense, where Joe Woods, if you're creative, you can create confusion. And if you create confusion, guess what? That's when you edge offensive players. That's when you put instant pressure on a quarterback, and it can lead to multiple sacks out of that. So it doesn't surprise me at all that he is listed one on the depth chart, because it just that to me makes perfect sense. And this is why I'm telling you, when you have the versatility to confuse people, because of a guy can play multiple positions, that's a benefit. That benefits the Broncos defense, something they didn't have last year, that will help them this year. Speaking of the Broncos defense, the secondary has been kind of, I guess the most consistent part of this defense, the no-fly zone. Obviously some changes with Aqib Talib gone. T.J. Ward was cut last year. A lot of changes there. The new role for Bradley Roby, that's going to be interesting to see how he steps up and becomes that everyday corner. Any concerns for you with this defensive secondary and kind of where they are and the way they're currently constructed?
I'm a little concerned about the depth. You know, Tremaine Brock has not practiced for multiple days, and you know, I've suggested they should probably consider picking up the phone and bringing in Kayvon Webster for depth, but Webster's got interest from at least five teams. He may not be able to wait until the Broncos determine what they've got in Brock. He might have to move on his own situation, but I like what I've seen out of the kid, Isaac Yadam from Boston College. Brennan Langley, frankly, still looks like a project. Great athlete, but still learning how to play corner, let alone play corner in the NFL. When they're right and they're healthy with Harris, Roby, Stewart, Simmons, and then Sue Cravens to cover tight ends, I like the versatility of this group. But, again, they're a little thin. They don't have the depth I would prefer. And Roby, the pressure's on. He will be a candidate for a contract extension before the season, but he might decide, I don't want to do it, because if he goes out and balls out and shows out, he's going to get paid, you know, as a starting corner in this league. But regardless, they need Roby to play well. They moved on from Talib for a couple, you know, number of reasons, but the main reason was they believe in Bradley Roby.
Right.
In year five, they believe in Bradley Roby. So,
and they should. You know, when he's gotten his opportunities, man, he's played exceptionally
well,
and he played really well as a starter in that Miami game. He was really a star, even though they got throttled in that game. He was really the star on defense of that game. So, like, Bradley Roby, I have a lot of faith in. I have a lot of faith in his ability to step up. I think the other thing is Chris Harris Jr. is going to be in a different role. I think you're going to see him travel a lot, something they haven't done a lot with this defense, but you're going to see him in the slot. You're going to see him outside. You're going to see Chris Harris Jr. kind of step up his role as well, which I think, you know, is a great thing. I think that's awesome, and I think he's up for that challenge. So, you know, we'll see exactly how that goes down, but this defense is going to be tested. They're going to be tested on Saturday night. And, you know, it's time for them to step up. It's time for them to kind of take that next step. And they can't rest on their laurels, because last year was a bad year. And it was a bad year for Shane Ray. And Shane Ray, I talked to him a lot just Sunday after the scrimmage they had. And I'm going to tell you how that conversation went and what you should expect from Shane Ray this year when we return. Schlereth and Evans, Mark Schlereth, along Troy Rank. Mike Evans out as he recovers from heart surgery. We're at UC Health Training Center. And by the way, Mike Evans doing great after open heart surgery, but he's recovering for the next week and a half or so. He'll be back and better than ever. But we were just talking about the first depth chart being released, and the inside information, or Mike Kliss has tweeted out that that it looks like Bradley Chubb will be first on the depth chart. I had a chance to bump into Shane Ray Sunday right after the scrimmage and talk to Shane Ray about, you know, his wrist and how he's feeling right now. And Troy, I tell you what, man, he was so excited about how that wrist has recovered, what he's got going on right now. And I get this sense, one, that he understands how big a year this is for him. He understands that he's auditioning for, you know, 31 other teams right now, and how committed he is, and how much an opportunity there is for him to remain healthy in this kind of situational pass rush role. I would assume that I mean, obviously Shane Ray's a competitor. He knows how much he's going to play. And I think they're pretty intrigued by how healthy he is and what he's been doing out here. Have you had a chance to talk to him? What have you seen from Shane Ray in this camp so far?
Yeah, better than expected. You know, the left wrist was, you know, totally damaged last year this time. And he ended up with four surgeries, and he thought he was three surgeries. Thought he was going to have a fourth surgery. He eschewed that surgery on the advice of the doctor, who said, "Hey, we can strengthen it, we can rehab it." And when I heard that, I wondered, "Hey, I get not having surgery. That's always the last alternative. But is he able to maintain his strength? Is he going to be able to lift? Because last year he got down to 219 pounds, Mark.
Right.
You can't play in this league at that weight. Really, maybe cornerback. He's back up to 250. He looks the part. He's got always had first step. He's always had an amazing first step. But I'm seeing the strength and the ability to shed blockers, which he did not have last year. So this could actually work to his advantage, having Chubb as a guy at 6'5", 270, who can do some of the dirty work inside. It allows you to basically use Ray as a pass rush specialist and get him matchups that are more advantageous. So in theory, this depth should make them all better.
Right.
And by making them all better, it should make Von Miller a candidate for defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
But I'm encouraged by what I see. Ray, you'll see, oh, he's got a cast on. It's not a cast. He's wearing a brace on his left wrist, and then he's taped it. So it looks like a cast. It's not a cast. And he says he has way more movement than he did last year when he came back from the injury. So far, so good. We'll see how it holds up, but I'm encouraged for him, hopeful for him he can stay healthy.
Yeah, they're going to streamline that as well. I talked to him about the wrist braces and the things that I used to wear when I was a player, and he's going to streamline that down quite a bit so it's not so bulky, cumbersome, something for offensive linemen to cheat, to grab, you know, things of that nature. So I think you're going to see a different wrist apparatus as we progress. But I think one of the things that intrigues me the most, and this is one of the reasons that I love the Bradley Chubb pick, is that when you put Bradley Chubb, Shane Ray outside of him, like when you're actually playing that, like where all of a sudden Bradley Chubb can be an outside linebacker, but he can play that Malik Jackson role as well from the inside pass rush ability because he's got that size, he's got that athleticism. I'm telling you, it's a great situation to be in. If he's inside, Derek Wolf is inside, and you've got Shane Ray on the edge, and you've got Shaq Barrett on the edge, or, opposite of Von Miller. I mean, it's just an incredible opportunity for you to get after the passer. And then, in the complementary nature of football, if your offense is in three and out every time, and that opponent's offense has got to throw the ball on occasion, you get into a bunch of third downs. I'm telling you what, I'm with you. I think Von Miller will be the MVP of the league, defensive MVP of the league.
Well, think about this. Last year, the year they won the Super Bowl, they had 51 sacks. Last year, they had 33.
Right.
Last year, they had 17 takeaways. They were one of the worst teams in football. It's hard to take the ball away when teams are leading 14 to nothing, and all they do is run and play boring, risk-averse football. If the offense can give them a lead, this defense is built to get after it. I mean, it's that why, and conversely, they had troubles doing much last year because you can't rush the passer
right
when you're down 14-0. So if they can play even offensively or give them a lead, this defense is built to get after it. Their defensive line is a strength, especially if Derek Wolf comes back and has a huge year. But I would expect, with the addition of Chubb and a healthy Shane Ray, their sack total goes from 33. It should be more like 45.
Right.
And if they get to 45, their takeaways will go from roughly 17 to more like 25 to 28. That's what they got to be thinking in terms of. You get to 45 sacks, 28 takeaways. Those are the numbers of a playoff team.
I look at it, you know, it's interesting. I look at, you mentioned how miserable it is, you know, when you can't rush the passer and when a team goes risk adverse. When you've got that 14-point lead,
we're going to get like, after it.
Oh, as an offense and an offensive line, you realize we're going to run it whenever we want to run it. You know, we're going to shorten this game. We're physically going to wear you out. Like, how gratifying it is to see a defense just demoralized that way. You've got that big lead, and you're just leaning on people. You're leaning on people, and you're just waiting for that one guy to make the one mistake to get out of gap. Like, he doesn't want to bang heads anymore, and he jumps out of his gap to kind of, oh, I'm going to make a play on the outside. And the running back cuts up underneath him, and the next thing you know, it's a 60-yard TD touchdown run, you know. I mean, those are the things that, that make you thrive as an offensive line. Those are the make things that make you, you know, excited about, you know, playing the game as an offense. And it's demoralizing. Like for a defense, you give up a big play in the passing game over the top and defensive players are like, well, you know, that happens occasionally, you know, whatever. But if you consistently are getting 4, 5, 6 yards a crack and you're just cramming it down the defense's throat, and that's a miserable place to be. And you know defensive players, man, they want to get stats. They want to get numbers.
And they started taking chances last year.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I didn't until I was just – I'm doing a piece right now. I was going to post on an exclusive interview I had with Darren Stewart. But they allowed 29 passing touchdowns last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the worst in the NFL. So while the no-fly zone ranked 4th in yards allowed per game – 29 touchdowns is miserable for them, given the reputation. So they're due for a bounce-back year, Mark. I mean, that number needs to be more in the line about 15 touchdowns a season,
right?
Not 29. It essentially it doubled from a year ago. And I expect them to have more sacks, and because they have more sacks, they should have more picks. They work hand-in-hand.
Right. Yeah, there's no question about that. They should. Those things should work, and I just think – right now, regardless of what this defensive secondary is, you know, there is this symbiotic relationship between rushing the passer and having a great front seven and the kind of turnover rate you get. The other thing is Justin Simmons is an incredible athlete. He's got great versatility. You know that he started at the cornerback position last year that Miami game. That's where he played. So they definitely switched that up, but they, you know, they've got that kind of faith in him as an athlete. And he played pretty well last year. Now, there were some mistakes in coverage. He got beat a couple times in that Miami game. He got beat by Jarvis Landry for a touchdown. I remember in Kansas City, I think he got beat down the seam by Travis Kelce for a touchdown. You know, there was a couple of missed coverage opportunities, mistakes, lack of communication in that secondary that cost him. But he should be, just as a second-year player, he should see things quicker, understand the defense better, and he should be a much better player. And if you become mentally that sharp with the athleticism that you have, great things are going to happen for Justin Simmons because he's got that kind of ability.
I agree. He's a rising star in this league, and he's another one of those kids. He would have fit perfectly in this year's draft class as a guy who's just a smart kid who gets it in every way. All he does is work. All he does is invest in the film room. And so I just see him getting better and better in year three. You know, I just see this as a guy who can really take that next step. Again, to be a playoff team, the defense is going to have to be borderline elite. And they're going to be borderline elite if they pressure the quarterback. But that all relates back to the offense giving them a lead.
It does, and that's one of the things that has to happen. There's no question about that. I think that has the potential of happening. I don't think there's any question about it. I'm just excited about seeing the kind of, like I said, complementary nature of how this team goes about its business, the way they basically operate together. Practice about to kick off here in about 30 minutes from UC Health Training Center as the Broncos get ready for another training camp practice as they prepare for their week. Minnesota kicks off. Minnesota Saturday night, the preseason game number 1. Man, I can't wait. It's going to be really exciting. And you know who's going to talk about that going forward here is Pritch and Cecil as they come up to the table right now. So live from UC Health Training Center, Schlereth and Evans for Troy Rank. I'm Mark Schlereth. Cecil and Pritch, they're coming up next.